Do you love fun facts, late night Wikipedia rabbit holes? I'm Jessie Carmen, and this is the What the Hell Are You Talking About podcast, where we talk all things curious. Every Friday, we'll explore strange happenings, the unexplained, current events, and more. I'll see you on the inside. Hi, hello. Welcome back to the What the Hell Are You Talking About podcast. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon when I'm recording this, which I think is the earliest that I have ever recorded a podcast. Like, I'm still drinking my coffee. I drink coffee all day, though, so that's really not saying much. But my first meeting was at 8:30, and we're still going, so look at us. Today is going to be a little bit different. Today is going to be a bit of a change in pace. Today is not going to be quite as meandering as the last three episodes. And that's because I decided on this topic last week. It is something I have actually researched before. So I spent some time refreshing myself. I have a bit of an outline, but I'm not really married to it. But today we're going to talk about public relations, specifically the Torches of Freedom campaign in the first wave feminist movement. You're probably like, what the fuck? That's so specific compared to anything else we've talked about so far. But I'm very excited about this, and this is what I want to talk about. And this is the What the Hell Are You Talking About podcast, where I talk about whatever the hell I want. So let's get going. Let's get into it. So to talk about public relations, first, we're going to talk about Edward Bernays. If you don't know who Bernays is, you're not alone. If you are in public relations or marketing, you definitely need to know who Bernays is, because he is the father of public relations. He is also the father of propaganda, and he famously said that he thinks public relations and propaganda are the same thing. But we should call public relations, because propaganda has a negative connotation in the eyes of the public. So you can see the PR at work. He's already on it. Some fun facts about Bernays. He was a philosopher, a theorist, a pioneer of lying to people for fun and profit. He is also the nephew of Freud the motherfucker himself. So he comes from a long line of dudes saying shit. What I want to talk about with Bernays, like I said, the Torches of Freedom campaign. So what was Torches of Freedom? You've got your minimal background knowledge on Bernays. I'm probably not going to tell you a whole lot more at this time, because this is the campaign that I want to talk about. So Torches of Freedom was something that happened in the 20th century during the first wave of feminism, like kind of during the suffrage movement, I think before suffrage. But you know, considering the 20s as when women got suffrage is very dismissive of any woman who, like, wasn't white. So, But during that movement, Edward Bernays was like, hey, I think cigarette companies have a giant, just massive untapped market. And that market is women. Because if you don't know, back in the 1920s, it was, like, super not cool, super not okay, super, like, just unacceptable for women to smoke cigarettes in public. So Bernays was hired to fix this problem. So you had some women that were smoking, but they were doing it in private or in secret or only at home. They weren't smoking as many cigarettes as men because they couldn't go and have a smoke break. They couldn't smoke because it was very much so, like, not proper, improper to be smoking. So the man who initially came to Bernays saying, hey, I want women to smoke, I want more money, cigarettes, yay, was George Washington Hill, the president of the American Tobacco Company. And he hired Bernays to launch this social campaign to make women smoke. Now, his goal wasn't necessarily to make it no longer taboo, but it was to tap into the growing number of women who wanted to perform this taboo act out of rebellion and to challenge social norms. Bernays is like, well, damn, how are we gonna get them to smoke if they're upholding this societal standard that we've set, this cultural requirement? So Bernays has this great idea. And this idea is that he is going to hire women to walk in the Easter Sunday parade on Fifth Avenue in New York City in 1929, smoking cigarettes, to have them march smoking cigarettes as a feminist statement. Now, Bernays did not coin Torches of Freedom. Torches of Freedom was coined by A.A. Brill. A.A. Brill is a psychoanalyst who was actually one of the first people to translate Freud, Bernays's uncle, Freud's work into English. Here's a really lovely quote from Brill about the oral fixation of the cigarette. He says, "Today, the emancipation of women has suppressed many of their feminine desires. More women now do the same work as men do. Many women bear no children. Those who do bear have fewer children. Feminine traits are masked. Cigarettes, which are equated with men, become torches of freedom." So that's where it started. And Bernays is like, damn, I can use that. So he makes it a feminist statement. He hires all these women, as I've said, to create a false feminist movement to break down social barriers for women smokers. Now, there was some actual advocacy happening here. This is during first wave feminism. Feminism is happening in its old-fashioned, white privilege-y way. And there were some women who were fighting for it to be acceptable for women to smoke cigarettes. But the campaign Bernays did, the fake one where he hired people, got the most attention. It's like a landmark moment in terms of the feminist movement and women smoking cigarettes in public. It was a corrupt habit that was punishable for women. Inappropriate. And if we're going to look back historically, as far back as the 17th century, painters had been using cigarettes to sort of symbolize the fallen woman, the corrupt woman, the impure, improper woman, immoral women, prostitutes and stuff, basically. We support sex work on this podcast, as long as it's consensual, by the way. In 1904, a woman was actually sentenced to jail for 30 days because she put her children's morals at risk by smoking in their presence. Now, yeah, don't smoke in front of kids. Secondhand smoke is bad, but this wasn't about that. This was when they were like, nah, cigarettes are fine. Tobacco is good for you. They were just like, that's so immoral. You're gonna corrupt your children. That's the devil. You're gonna fuck up your kids. Like, what? 1904, y'all. Like, this is like some last century shit. It's wild. In 1908, the city of New York passed a law that made it illegal for women to smoke in public. And this continued. Laws were passed or proposed in many U.S. cities as late as like the mid-20s to make it illegal for women to smoke. Now, when we're talking about the way this was a movement already before Bernays came on the scene and used it to make the cigarette companies money, what we're looking at is women who entered the workforce during World War I and began smoking because they really found it empowering. It was a way for women to challenge the patriarchy because it was taboo. So by the time that Bernays launches the Torches of Freedom campaign, this was something that was already happening among the most rebellious and seductive of women. Like, if you look back on the 20s, when you see women smoking, whether that's in media or photographs or paintings or whatever, it's going to be like the flappers. It's going to be the sexy ladies, the seductresses, things like that. And as the women's rights movement grew, as first wave feminism progressed and kept going and never became as intersectional as it needed to be, more and more women were on board with doing this taboo act because it symbolized women's rights. That is what Bernays took and just fucking ran with, hiring everybody at this parade. And I know I've said that this was already a little bit of a movement, but it was very small. And it was, in some cities, still illegal. Like, this was a big deal. This was a scandal. And the way that this campaign worked, he hired these women to do this at this parade, essentially like an actual like hired protester. And then he hired photographers to take photos of this happening. He hired, I think there was even a video of it. And he made sure that these things were published all over the fucking world so that people would be like, women smoking. And some actual feminist leaders actually joined in on it. You have actual feminists from this time saying like, yeah, light a torch of freedom, fight the power, sex taboo. And that was Ruth Hale. It's not exactly a direct quote, but it's essentially what she said. So this movement that we had already had, and remember, this movement we'd already had was much more underground. And seeing so many women do this so publicly was, it was crazy. So if we're looking at the numbers, in 1923, women purchased 5% of all cigarettes sold. In 1929, after Torches of Freedom, women had purchased 12%. That is more than, like, if we're looking at the percentage points, that is more than 100% growth in the amount of women buying cigarettes because of this masterful public relations propaganda campaign. And it kept going. It kept going until the 70s. Women have always smoked less than men when we look at the numbers, but yeah. And Torches of Freedom is where we get entire cigarette brands like Virginia Slims. Virginia Slims are like cigarettes made specifically for women. And we see a resurgence in Torches of Freedom in the 90s when the cigarette companies are once again saying, oh my God, we're losing money because people figured out tobacco is bad. So they leaned back into the advertising campaigns of the late 1920s and early 1930s. They went back to Bernays, back to some Freud shit and some really interesting ideas of gender and sexuality and empowerment, backwards shit, essentially. And they were like, okay, we're going to do it again. We're going to continue using cigarettes as a symbol of emancipation. And we're going to do that not only in the United States. We're going to do it in countries where women are more oppressed. We're going to do it in Eastern Europe. We're going to be like, look at this Western symbol of freedom, America. Ah. So this one marketing campaign completely changed the cigarette industry, influenced the actual first wave feminist movement, and came back in the 90s after people figured out cigarettes were dangerous. And it actually did bolster sales, particularly in Europe and Japan. So I know this might be a little disjointed because I was talking about it as I went. This might not be the most organized way for me to have explained this, but when you look at Edward Bernays and you look at the Torches of Freedom campaign, does that feel ethical? Or does that feel slimy? Can you see where propaganda and PR intersect? The point I'm getting at here is that while I disagree with Bernays on a lot of things, and I don't think that he was, like, a good person, he was right when he said public relations and propaganda are the same. Today, something that's really popular is conspiracy theories. Now, if you actually know anything about conspiracy theories, you'll know that most of them have weirdly racist or anti-Semitic roots, even if they seem very far divorced from that. And even when you get into, like, flat earther books, you're just going to be hit in the face with some anti-Semitic shit and some racist shit that doesn't really have anything to do with flat earth. What I'm saying is that a lot of those popular conspiracy theories are, like, messed up. Like, the lizard people conspiracy theory is anti-Semitic. Like, the implication is that the lizard people are Jewish. Like, That's what that's about. So a lot of these conspiracy theories are racist, anti-Semitic, bigoted, even covertly so. Some of them are overt, but, you know. And I know I've talked a little bit about how I'm on the left of things on this podcast, but this does not just apply to conservatives. I see so many people on the left that are like, yeah, I believe in this conspiracy theory. And then when you tell them that it has racist roots, they're like, what? No. You're a sheep. Like, this is not exclusive to the people that are like, Trump is still the president. Conspiracy theories like this have been around for much longer than Donald Trump has been a political figure, and they have been problematic for much longer than that as well. When we're coming outside of those conspiracy theories that are secretly discriminatory or not so secretly, or that are secretly blaming small groups of people for everything that's wrong in the world, a lot of the times when I see people pointing and saying, that doesn't add up, that's a conspiracy, what's happening here? It's frequently things that are happening in the media. And what I need all of you to know and understand is that almost 100% of the time, what you're pointing at is a really good PR campaign. Sometimes what you're pointing at is corruption, scammers, slimy people, people lying. But if you look at something like in the news and you think that feels engineered, that's public relations and marketing. There was a clip going around for a while with all of these different local news channels having the anchors say the exact same script about fake news. And people were all like, see, the news is fake. The news isn't fake. All of those local stations are just owned by the same company, so they all got the same script. More often than not, it's not a conspiracy, it's public relations. If it is a conspiracy, it's not people controlling the world. It's people hoarding wealth, it's people making money, it's about greed. It's about greed. And it's about greed, it's about offshore accounts, it's about criminal activity. So my final takeaway for this episode would be to be critical of the media you consume. Now, I'm not saying fake news, you can't trust anything, but I am saying that you should probably read from multiple sources, right? I am saying you should probably try to figure out where the information you learn is coming from. What study did those numbers in that article come from? Or did those numbers in that random blog post by an unregulated media company come from anywhere? Things like that. Media is integral to our lives. There are some people who are very good at interpreting and understanding media, but I think across the board, in part because of sensationalization, and because news companies are unfortunately businesses who also have to pay the bills, and sometimes that means shitty headlines for clicks. Something else that we can talk about here too is the way you interact with brands on social media. All the brands have accounts and they're all trying to be relatable. That's PR. That's propaganda to make you think the brand is your friend, essentially. So keep that one in mind. I'm not saying you need to be distrustful of media, but I am saying that for a culture that's so media dependent, we really lack media literacy. Spotting propaganda is hard, especially when you are surrounded by it in marketing all the time. People use propaganda and PR because it works. It's designed to work. So, stay safe out there. Always read multiple sources. Always check multiple sources. And don't put too much credence in anecdotes, but believe people when they tell you about their experiences. I didn't know that this was going to go entirely this direction in terms of being critical of media and media literacy, but I think it's good that it did because this is a very important and very interesting conversation to be having, and I am by no way an expert. This is something I would love to talk about further with an expert, actually, but yeah, I'm glad that we went this direction. I'm glad we talked about this. We had a nice little chat, and I hope that you are a little bit more skeptical of brands and advertising. And yeah, I'll see you on the inside.
Disclaimer: this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. The stories and statements expressed herein are experiences and opinions. They may not represent the views of the production studio or the hosts. If you disagree with our content, that's okay. No podcast is perfect for everyone.